I don't know. That's just what pedestrian, average, mediocre receivers do. What's up? What's up? My man Deion Sanders, we all right, huh? We all right? Yeah, we all right. We gonna go into the Super Bowl again, being all right.
You're listening to the Pedestrian Podcast, the official UK podcast for the Seattle Seahawks. Here are your hosts, Ross Bell, Stuart Court, and Adam Nathan. Go Hawks!
Hello, and after a few days of managing to re-up our energy levels and realise what is real and what is not after what was quite an atrocious first half in Santa Clara during the Seahawks and 49ers game, we are back with another edition of the Pedestrian Podcast. Myself, Stuart Court, is, as yet again this week, joined by one of the other two, Mr. Adam Nathan. How are we, sir?
Yeah, sorry, guys. It's me. It's not. I know you all got your hopes up when he said, I've only got one, it would be Ross. But no, you're stuck with me. You're stuck with me, I'm afraid.
So, yeah, but before we dive deep, that first half was quite, as a lot of people on Twitter put, quite hard on the eyes, wasn't it, that first half?
It was hard on the eyes. I was hungover because it was my 30th the day before, so the hangover meant it was hard on my senses. It was hard on everything, hard on my sinuses. Just the whole thing was a bit of a cluster. So I was very pleased to see the back of that half, and hopefully we'll never see it again, even though we've had about five of them this season, unfortunately.
Yeah, there's a definite first half, second half swing. A few people have pointed out even the difference in particular players have quite an uptick in the second half, which you'd expect isn't sustainable. But yeah, when the team on both sides of the ball did wake up in the second half, they in some fashion, despite the scoreline only showing a 9-point difference, really did 9-point difference, 11-point difference, really did run away with it in some ways, didn't they, Adam?
Yeah, I thought they actually played pretty well. I messaged you, I think, a couple of days ago and said that it reminded me of the Giants game where you come away from it actually being fairly positive. The only reason I'm not that positive sort of going in the long run is the fact that there are so many injuries on this team in backbreaking positions that I still sort of feel like we're just marching towards eventual defeat somewhere down the line if we even get to sort of a win-or-go-home type game. But, look, they did as much as they could in the second half. Seahawks are pretty good at playing down to their opposition, annoyingly, which is what they did for a period. But they found a way to get it done. And look, if they win every game by 1 point for the rest of the season, they'll win the Super Bowl. So I'll take that.
Yeah, exactly. But as always, this is how it sounded via the voice on ESPN Radio of Steve.
Stays in the backfield. Russell out of the shotgun on first and goal at the 3. Takes the snap. Hands. No, he keeps it. Russell doesn't. He walks in untouched. Touchdown, Seahawks! The read keep, and the keep paid off for number 3. Baker Lacy on second down. Laying it up over the top. Bennett! He's in! Touchdown, Seahawks! A beautiful play fake to Lacy that time. Everybody stopped except Nick Vanette, and he went out into the right side of the end zone. And Russell laid it up perfect. Jimmy Graham is wide to the right side. Now in motion is Lockett from right to left. Russell, empty backfield, takes a shotgun snap. He looks to Graham, fires. Ball is caught by Jimmy Graham. Touchdown, Seahawks! And you just know the Niners out there are thinking alley-oop. And here comes Jimmy hard to the middle of the field. And Russell just lays it on him from 1 yard out.
Yeah, everything fell into place in some ways, some aspects on the offensive side. Russell Wilson, obviously the first guy we're going to focus on. 20 for 34, 228 yards, 2 touchdowns, and a weird, not a terrible throw on the first play of the game. First time in his career that he's thrown an interception with his first passing attempt in a game. He also had his 25 yards and a touchdown on 7 rushing attempts. But as we said last week, and we're going to say about a guy on the other side of the ball and a bit later, his MVP conversation, just how much he's carrying his team, just only continues to grow and grow week on week, doesn't it, Adam?
Yeah, he couldn't be doing any more for the team. It's one of those situations where you have to accept that he's going to turn the ball over maybe a little bit more than he used to because he has to force it a bit more than he used to. And I think that's probably a trade-off that you probably have to go with as not the end of the world because he more than makes up for it later on in the game, as we saw.
Yeah, and there's also with that, more interceptions comes through more passes, but also there's a lot of people pointing to the amount of drops that Seahawks receivers are having this year. But also that falls in the same category, didn't it? Because if you throw more, there's more balls possible to drop, isn't it?
Yeah, I think Paul Richardson had a couple of bad ones. Jimmy Graham had one that I think he was going to get whacked either way regardless. But he should have caught that one. Wilson leads the league in passing attempts, which is just not something you would ever have expected from a Pete Carroll team.
No, not when Messrs. Brady and Breeze are still knocking about and standing upright for what week are we? 12, 13 weeks into a season. Yeah, but Wilson's legs, they did enough, and the running game showed some signs, but it's still nowhere near what it needs to be as we move into the final quarter of the season, Adam.
The running game is, it's not there. I think Eddie Lacy had like 5 yards per carry in his first 5 carries and then 1 yard per carry in the final 12. Yeah. He just has nothing interesting about him. He's so boring to watch. It's just, it's painful. As someone said, I'm not sure if I said this last week or not, but instead of handing in the ball, just change the marker on the, just change the down, because it'd probably be better for everyone. And you can't risk getting an injury if the play doesn't happen.
No.
But the swing pass to McKissic seemed to work pretty well. That sort of put us in a fairly reliable 2nd and 6, which I'll take if you offered that to me every time.
Yeah.
And Wilson, moving around a bit more. I mean, it's not going to be a good running game, that's for sure. But if it can be sort of a bit less shit than it has been, and I think Sunday was a bit less shit, and that's not too bad.
Yeah, Eddie Lacy finished 17 carries for 46 yards, the longest of 11, and JD McKissic 4 rushes... for 22, and also I did 4 catches for 24 as well, and those swing passes. But the biggest mystery from Sunday was the fact that Thomas Rawls only had one snap, didn't carry the ball, didn't do anything with that one snap. And then Pete Carroll said on Monday or Wednesday that there's not enough to go around. But when you slice up Eddie Lacy's 17 carries, there is, isn't there?
I mean, there's plenty to go around, and I think I'd have more respect if they just came out and said, yeah, he's not our guy at the minute. We're looking else, we're looking elsewhere. We're going to see what Eddie can do. I mean, it's a little bit insulting to say what he said and sort of treat the fans a bit like idiots, because in no way could you possibly tell me that there's not enough to go around when you look at how the running game's working thus far. And, Eddie Lacy getting, as you say, 17 carries. That means there's 17 carries to go around.
Yeah, exactly. Paul Richardson led the team again on the day with 4 catches for 70 yards, despite a couple of notable drops. Doug Baldwin only had 2 catches, 25. Tyler Lockett, very up and down season for him, without a catch. But the tight ends was the one which caught most attention, with one tight end in his second year catching his first touchdown in his NFL career, and another tight end breaking Seahawks franchise records. Jimmy Graham with 3 catches for 34 yards and a 1 yard touchdown, which I think for both of us, for different reasons, was, is it fair to say, probably our favourite play of the lot on Sunday, the Jimmy Graham touchdown?
Yeah, I like that play. I mean, I as soon as I think it was Lockett went in motion, it was just so obvious that the touchdown was going to come. It's been, I don't know why teams are still allowing that to happen, a smaller cornerback on Jimmy Graham. But it was cool. I think you really like the X's and O's part of it. But
yeah.
Any play that gets Jimmy Graham a touchdown gets me off my seat. So yeah. That was always good fun to watch.
Yeah, they completely isolated Jimmy Graham one-on-one with, I think, was it 3 or 4 receivers on the other side of the ball. The running back was to Russell Wilson's left as well. So everyone was that side, and you get one-on-one. And if you watch as a freeze frame of it, Akilah Witherspoon, the rookie corner for Niners, is fading to go outside to defend the alley-oop to Jimmy Graham, and instead they run a slant route from the 1 yard line, and Jimmy Graham just catches it because Witherspoon's gone the wrong way, basically. So it's a really, really cool play, really, really cool play design, and obviously fire bevel and all that. But yeah, and also Nick Vanette got 2 catches on the day. One was one would come after Russell Wilson did his usual escape routine. Nick Vanette, though, he's with Wilson now, he stood up as he stepped up as you hope someone in his position would in second year.
Yeah, I mean, he's a third round pick, and it's his second round, and he's done sweet Fanny Adam in the last 2 years so far. So we need him to do that, and it was a good catch. It was a nice route, and it would be an absolute. No one would be happier than me if Nick Vanette can come through as a big time target in the future, because you need your draft picks to do stuff, especially the last year's third round. Who was it? Vanette, Procise, and one other.
I think it was Odhiambo, wasn't it?
Yeah, Odhiambo. So, I mean, let's be honest, you've not got that much from three third-round picks, which, you know, going into the draft was probably the position the area you're most excited for us to have. Yeah. Wow, three third-round picks. And it's about time they started stepping up and doing stuff. So, good on Nick Vinette, and let's hope that's the first of 100.
Yeah. That would be nice. But yeah, Nick Vinette, though, just seemed like Luke Wilson's got a good chance of playing this in against the Eagles. But if he does continue to step up with question marks over the future, moving into 2018 of Jimmy Graham and Luke Wilson, having something on tape from Nick Vinette will help in a salary cap era, wouldn't it? Because if you got a third round pick, he's not going to be on much. He's under club control for 2 more years, I'd figure. It's helpful for the team in a larger sense as well, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it would be very sort of Seahawky, McAvoy-ish to sort of see the guy make one play and then say, oh, we'll get rid of Jimmy Graham now because we've got Nick Vinette. So let's hope that doesn't happen, you know, unless the guy puts a lot more tape on in the rest of the season. But, you know, something is better than nothing without stating the most obvious thing of all time.
Yeah, and also, I think he now has more touchdowns this year than Luke Wilson as well, which is bizarre, because the way Luke Wilson is a good player, but the way he was held up when Jimmy Graham was getting pelters 6 weeks ago, and then Nick Vinette come in and already got more touchdowns than him. But also, as I mentioned, Doug Baldwin, I've shared a couple of times to you on here and probably on WhatsApp, he's not at 100, is he?
No, he looks like he's struggling with something a little bit. I mean, it's not even that anything particularly looks off. It just looks like he's going in sort of the tiniest bit slower motion than he normally does. He didn't have a catch for a little while, I don't think, in the game. And maybe he got his sort of customary early pass for no reason, sort of a bubble screen. But, he doesn't quite look himself. I mean, Jimmy Graham didn't look himself either. In the first quarter, I was wondering whether it would get anything out of either of the two guys. I'm not sure either of them had a catch after the first quarter. Might have to check me on that. But I don't think it was – if they had any, it was one between them.
I don't think Jimmy Graham did. I think Baldwin had one.
Okay. And so I was a bit worried about where the game plan was going to go, but thankfully enough people stepped up. And, yeah, Richardson, again, is almost in the sort of wide receiver one bracket with the Seahawks, who don't tend to have a particularly dominant guy and sort of spread it amongst two or three. Richardson's probably up in that group now.
Yeah, there is something about the wide receiver one. There's someone on Twitter called Dan Hatman, who runs the Scout Academy, which seems a pretty cool enterprise as well. But he said, we're talking about the Patriots not having the wide receiver one. It's just because they haven't not prioritized a big body, the Patriots, this is outside lane guy since Randy Moss, does not necessarily indicate they don't have a guy they build things around. And that's something you can easily see with the Seahawks and the receiving group, couldn't you? We don't have that big dominating presence. Jimmy Graham is basically wide receiver, I know, but I mean that's something where the good teams find different ways to pinpoint players' strengths, and you don't always have to have like the standard fit what you'd expect from a receiving group, do you? And that's a thing that's worked for the Patriots clearly with Brandon Cooks and all the slot receivers in the world, and it's something that's working for the Seahawks, isn't it?
Yeah, Patriots are a pretty good example of the same sort of thing. I mean, I've got Brandon Cooks in one of my fantasy teams, for example, and there's some weeks where he's, you know, God's gift, and other weeks where the game plan doesn't suit. And I guess in a way, that's more suggestive of good coaching coming to the fore when, you know, each game features a different guy. I got no problem with that. And if the Seahawks can be efficient in the way they use their receivers like that, then good on it. And certainly makes it easy. It makes it harder for defensive coordinators to try and stop, as opposed to, you know, AJ Green for the Bengals plus no one.
Yeah, there's also a thing with the Bengals where it's AJ Green and a receiver that the head coach detests, and John Ross as well. So there is different ways to do it, and obviously not all of them are effective. A few stats which have come from the game. Obviously, a lot of them focused on Jimmy Graham, as he did break the Seahawks franchise record for touchdowns by a tight end. He now has 16, which is tied ninth with John Williams, which is. He's moved ahead of Golden Tate and Deion Branch. Also, Jimmy Graham this season has seen 12 targets from inside the 5-yard line. No other player in the NFL has seen more than five. And as I said to Adam before we come on air, there is quite a bit of an anomaly with Jimmy Graham's game log. The three largest yardage outputs of the season are three of the five games where he hasn't caught a touchdown this season. In the first 2 weeks, he had two games where he had 9 yards and zero touchdowns, but then he had 72 against the Titans, 61 against the Colts, and 59 against the Redskins 3 weeks ago, and he didn't have a single touchdown. The games where he has had touchdowns, he's had 37, 51, 39, 59, 39, 27, 58, and 34 yards. He's also 5 yards lower on a yards per reception tear than he has been in any point of his career. He's 3.3 yards short of his yards per reception career average. He's only got 9.1 yards a reception. It's quite a weird anomaly where it's kind of they've met in the middle where everyone, people want to say we're using more, but we're not exactly using him more in yardages, we're using him more in profitable situations, Adam.
Yeah, I call that Dele Alli syndrome, where you're absolutely shite for 89 minutes and then score a goal. Jimmy Graham is sort of doing a sort of similar thing. He's sort of not doing quite as much and then scoring the touchdown.
Yeah.
Graham can never be as despicable as Ali at his worst, but that's probably the best way I could describe it in my inimitable manner, if I say so myself.
I quite like that. On the defensive, one more thing on the defensive line: Dwayne Brown, Luke Jokel, Justin Britt, Ethan Posic, and Jermaine Ifedi. Didn't look too bad for most of it on Sunday, did they? But especially again, protecting Russell Wilson when he did have a pocket, Adam.
Well, in fairness, they didn't look bad particularly. I mean, the run game could still be better. But at left guard, you've got a guy making a lot of money. Left tackle, you've got a guy making a lot of money. At left guard, you've got a guy making a lot of money. At center, you've got a guy making a decent amount of money. At right guard, you've got a high draft pick. And at right tackle, you've got a high draft pick. So for all of those that say, you know, we're not investing in the line, if you compare the line in terms of their stature and where they came from and contracts that they're on now and compare that to, let's say, the line that started the year last season, that you'll have to remind me exactly what it was. I mean, it's chalk and cheese in terms of investment.
Yeah, who was the line last year?
Well, you would have had Bradley Sowell, Gary Gilliam at tackles.
Yeah, Bradley Sowell, Mark Gawinski, Justin Britt.
Who wasn't paid yet and a new position.
I can't remember who the right guard was.
It would be Ifedi.
Oh, yeah. And then,
although, no, he was injured.
Yeah. So the week one, yeah, he wouldn't have been a Fede. Oh.
Who was the week one game last year? It was against the Dolphins, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Let's check this for you, our loyal listener. Steen.
But yeah, but we did mention it last week that the investment is clearly there. They were clearly spooked in some form or manner. What happened, not just last season, but then with George Fant going down, they were really aggressive in going to get Dwayne Brown. There's a picture from inside the locker room on Sunday from Rod Martin. Dwayne Brown is absolutely ginormous. He is huge. He's a huge being, and it's someone who he showed on Sunday a couple of times that he can move quite well. But as you said, it is quite different from week one last year.
And obviously we were a little bit terrified that we had the Rams the week after, as we knew it didn't go particularly well. Where is the line? Obviously, the article isn't loading. Well, you just got to take our word for it that it wasn't a very good offensive line.
The offensive line was Bradley Sowell, Mark Gawinski, Justin Britt, Jamarcus Webb, and, well, apparently we didn't play a right tackle according to Pro Football Reference, which some could say with Jermaine Ifedi is possible.
Ifedi was definitely injured. Was it not Gary Gilliam?
It was. They just got him listed completely separate to all the other linemen. it was Sal Gawinski, Britt, Webb, and Gary Gilliam against the Dominican Sue and Cameron Wake and the Dolphins. And now we've got, which was a case of undrafted, fourth round pick, second round pick, no idea. And so now we've got, 2 seconds and three firsts, or 3 seconds and two firsts in the lineup. The something clearly spooked him over the last season, and obviously then George Fant's injury. Their summer-long plan with him was blown out of the water in pre-season. And they've been aggressive since. And on Sunday, they showed the first signs of the aggression having somewhat of a payoff. Is that fair?
Yeah, I mean, and the good thing is that line is probably, let's say, right tackle aside, which is the only question mark, and he's the highest draft pick, probably going to be your line going into next season, which is a real positive, because at least you've got a degree of continuity for the first time in ever.
Yeah, I think in some form, I think you're only going to have change one, maybe. I think if they give up on the Fede, which depends how the draft falls to one, but also Jokel, paying Jokel the money they did. I know they paid it after, but his knees cropped up.
Yeah, I mean, Odhiambo could feasibly play left guard and do pretty well. That was his starting position in the first place.
Yeah, that's where he spent all of his time at, in college as well. So that I don't see, like what we just said, we've got five, well, pretty much a completely new line from 15 months ago. I don't see that. Don't see that happening again, because as we've seen, it just does not work. On the defensive side, though, as I said, on the offense, it's Russell Wilson carrying the heaviest load. On defense, it's Bobby Wagner, and he's, for me, pushing himself way in front and defensive player of the year. The only other person I could possibly put in the bracket for DPOY at this point is Javon Clowney, Adam.
Yeah, I think Jalen Ramsey might have something to say about that. His numbers are absolutely absurd, but it's probably trickier with a cornerback who's more system dependent. But Wagner is playing out of his mind. And without him, God knows. I mean, you can lose players, and we have lost players, but I think he might be the one that if we lost him now, you know, any team I think could score any number of points on us. He has just been incredibly good and is a joy to watch.
Yeah, he's played a different sphere this year. The interception, I actually thought it was a fumble until I saw the box score later, because I was running back and forth from the bar at Birmingham. But yeah, the interception is just absolutely incredible. The fact that there's like a half second window to clutch that ball and come down, obviously, yeah, it's just, I've watched it dozens and dozens of times at Sunday. It's just quite incredible to watch. And also someone else, to a lesser extent, who is stepping up in the absence of others. Michael Bennett got another sack. I think he's at 7.5, maybe 8 sacks so far. And he's doing it all, which sounds like from what Pete Carroll said on Wednesday, on one foot, Adam.
Yeah, he's sort of having like a very veteran-style season, like just sort of going about his business. He obviously made a lot of noise, and rightly so. You won't hear me criticising him for it with the Las Vegas stuff. But his on-field play is actually pretty quiet in a strange way. He's just sort of going about his business, getting his sacks, a couple of pumps, and back to the line of scrimmage for an offside. Like, it's good to watch.
Yeah, that's quite a subtle dig in the midst of praising the player as well, Adam. Well done.
Well, you couldn't not to Michael Bennett without bringing up the offsides.
No, I mean, that's very true.
Practically synonymous at this stage.
That is very true. On Sunday, though, the defensive line, as I think I put on our WhatsApp group chat, that it was just having quite a day in the first half. It continued. Every single defensive lineman had at least one quarterback hit or quarterback pressure. And Sheldon Richardson, which is something quite remarkable for a defensive tackle, had 6 tackles on Sunday. It was, we heard a lot about death row when Sheldon Richardson joined the team. Obviously, missing Cliff Avril, they really did put on a clinic in the death row moniker, which was nicked somewhat from the Huskies, showed up on Sunday, didn't it?
I feel pretty sorry for Sheldon Richardson because, you know, so many times when you're watching like an America's game after a team wins a Super Bowl, you get the coach or a guy saying, you know, we brought this guy into the locker room and he made such a difference with his play. And Richardson's is playing so well, has been such a disruptive force in the interior line. And it's a shame that we're not probably going to get the results of the season that we should do because of other players' injury. Yeah. And I feel that if we did get, you know, and hit the heights that this team could have done, I think people will be looking at the Sheldon Richardson deal and saying that was the deal that got us over the edge.
Yeah, I think, I mean, he's not same with Jimmy Graham to a certain extent. He's not stacking up the stat sheet apart from he did on Sunday. But his presence with all that's gone on around him, and Jaron Reed missed like a game or two, and obviously Cliff Avril's injury issues as well. He has been a very welcome presence further back.
And he makes like big plays at big times as the sack on Matt Ryan. Like, he just makes, when you need someone to step up and make a play, like, that's what's pissed me off the most about the Seahawks defense a lot of times. And, you know, even this year, like against the Redskins, like sometimes someone needs to step up and make a play. And Richardson is a bit of a talismanic figure when it comes to that.
Yeah, the decision they're going to have to make with his contract in the spring is going to be interesting to watch, because the money is going to be eye-wateringly large, you'd expect. But we criticised the off-season moves last year of the Seahawks. We criticised them to a certain extent this year, but Bradley McDougal, is it fair to put him in Cliff Averill, Michael Bennett 2013 category, Adam?
I think he's making plays all over the field, and you know, to be frank, the Seahawks are probably going to have to move on from Cam Chancellor one way or another this summer, because I reckon he might retire. And you know, you have to hope that, you know, unfortunately, that the league waits for no man, and you have to find some. You can't just mourn the loss of someone forever. You have to fill the space and try and go about your business. And McDougal looks like the kind of guy that may be able to fill in and do the job that the team needs, because he's been really impressive.
Yeah, he was quite surprised when we signed, not when we signed him, but the money we signed for was as minimal as it was, because he's someone who really did pop when you watched the Buccaneers last year. Obviously, the interception against us as well last year. But he's played both free safety and strong safety, like with the offensive line panic that they had after George Fant and after last year. They really did see the weakness behind Earl and Chancellor with, Terrell and McCray last year, and they really have hit the jackpot with McDougal. Elsewhere, though, Byron Maxwell, he had a bit of a rough day. Every pass which was thrown his way was completed, including the last play of the game, which is the 49ers touchdown. But that's just picking feathers, isn't it? I mean, what was a pretty disrupted defensive performance, Adam?
Yeah, I mean, everything was in front of Maxwell that was caught.
Yeah.
And, you know, Griffin was out, wasn't he, with the concussion?
Yeah.
Yeah, they gave up 6 points in the game, let's be honest. And to any NFL team, that is impressive. I don't care who you're playing against. You know, that was a good defensive performance against a crap team. But ultimately, you still have to do it. Like, you know, look how many times the Steelers or whatever have lost to a shite team because they've not got it done. Like, you have to still go and win these games. And they did. They went out and they proved themselves and did really well. And I'm not going to, you know, sort of mac on their defense at all for how they played on Sunday. I thought they did a really good job in the situation.
Yeah, I agree completely. Obviously, on Sunday, I was somewhat distracted as we had some technical issues at the Birmingham meet. It ended up with me running back to my hotel and asking them to borrow a bedsheet because the projector wasn't quite working. But a massive thanks to all the staff and the guys at Actress and Bishop, Rob Gregg, for helping us sort the venue and standing at the bar to make sure everyone was well fireballed up during the night as well. Obviously, James Key did, with myself, deserves a lot of credit as well. And obviously, on Sunday, we did sort out and arrange the 2018 national meeting to do that, to help. If you've been living under a rock the last few days, I caught up with Martin Opry, who is the Southwest rep for the UK Seahawkers, to announce where the meet is going to be. And here's what he had to say outside in the very, very cold of Birmingham on Sunday night.
Right, as our part of being on the Pedestrian Podcast, we are still the official podcast for UK Seahawkers. And as we move into 2018, work has been done and is being done to bring the 2018 national meet. Joining me outside here at the Midlands meet for the Niners game on Thanksgiving weekend at the Atchison Bishop is the man behind sorting it all out this year. And to announce where it is going to be, if you haven't seen on the Facebook group, is Mr. Martin Opry. How are we, sir?
I'm good, thanks. I'm very cold. But
it's very freezing.
Yeah, you've dragged me outside. I enjoy my point inside, but yeah, I've come here to announce.
Yeah, so the 2018 meet, obviously we've been in Manchester, Nottingham, but all the separate regional ones.
Yeah.
2018 meet is?
Bristol, so my hometown. I'm very looking forward to it. It's going to be on the 19th of May in Toto's Wine Bar in Bristol.
Cool. So is that central now? How is it easy to get to for people?
It's very close to the centre. Got a lot of bars in there. It's about 10 minutes walk from the train station. Airport's quite close by, so it's very central for everything.
Awesome.
Lots of hotels around. If anyone's stuck, you can always give me a shout on Facebook.
Yeah.
And I can help recommend places if people want.
Yeah, so Martin is the
Southwest
rep for the UK Seahawkers. So if you have him on Facebook, send him a quick nudge to thank him for all the work he's put into scouting and booking and sorting everything out. Saturday, 19th of May 2018, the third annual national meet for the UK Seahawkers will be at Toto's Wine Bar.
They sell cider and beer as well, which is good.
Yeah, that's very
not
good.
Not just wine.
Yeah. Toto's Wine Bar in Bristol. It's right along the river. It does look pretty cool. venue. All the ticket information will be posted on ukseahawks.com and the Facebook page, UK Seattle Seahawks Fan. As a van goes past with a very loud engine, proving that we are outside. But quickly, before we go back in, because it is freezing, how did you become a Seahawks fan?
Back in 2003, doing the sweepstakes, I used to work in Sports Direct, UK's number one. little plug. I don't anymore, though. But did the sweepstakes and work, never followed NFL before, never seen any games. Picked out the Seahawks from a draft. The person who arranged the draft was a Colts fan, and he laughed up in my face and said they were terrible. So strong connection since then, as I'm a Bristol City fan as well, and we're terrible too.
Yeah,
apart from this season.
There is a common thread of people being Seahawks fans who also support terrible football teams.
Most football teams are terrible.
You're standing across the table with one, such an example of that.
Stuck with them. Watched the first game was of Super Bowl in 2005 ever watched, and then just stuck with them since then. And thanks to the group, it's grown quite a lot.
Yeah, and you were at the first one in Manchester.
Yeah, it's brilliant meet. The first time I met Eddie. I was a Seahawks fan apart from myself, but yeah, it's great to meet everyone. I took my son Jack along as well.
He was a bit of a star of the show.
He was. He had a little Wilson jersey on as well.
Yeah.
But yeah, just to meet everyone else was a brilliant night. So look forward to creating the same magic in Bristol.
As I'm saying, no pressure, but
a lot to live up to, but I'm sure we can manage it.
Yeah. So yes, thank you, Martin. It's 19th May 2018. National meet is happening, ladies and gents. Cheers, Mark.
Thanks, Stu.
Yeah, massive thanks to Martin for braving the cold for those few minutes. It was biting, and obviously massive thanks to the truck driver who drove past just at the opportune time as well. May 19th, 2018 in Bristol. It should be a fun night, and I think there's going to be a bit of an invasion in that one hotel, Adam. It's quite impressive how many people are booking that room.
Did I see there's like 60 people trying to book the same hotel in one night?
Yeah. In 20.
I mean, the hotel manager must know what the hell's going on. Brilliant.
In 48 hours, they had, I think, 62 bookings, it said on booking.com. So, yeah.
Danny's just booking a summer holiday now. He was going from Brighton, now he's going to Benidorm. A few more bookings will be in Barbados.
Yeah, which going from Bristol, it's all the bees as well. Yeah, the Seahawks move on, though, and move ahead back on to primetime, move back into Centric Field, the familiar surroundings where they have lost the last two games. And waiting for them back at home on Sunday Night Football is the 9-2 Eagles?
More than us, less than us.
Yeah. But the NFC and quite probably the NFL's number one team right now. But with all that said, as the NFL's top team so far in 2017, it's quite a daunting proposition, isn't it?
Yeah, but it's still the Eagles for me. There are teams that I respect, and then there's teams like the Eagles that, for me, I just can't believe they can ever actually be that good. Like the green uniforms and you know, weird grass on their field. Like, they don't look like a primetime team. I mean, they are, obviously, and they're obviously doing something right, but just the type of team that, like, I feel if we were fully healthy, like, I would just expect us just to go in and just teach them the sort of lesson that we used to teach teams like the Saints in 2013 when they came to CenturyLink on Monday Night Football, and we just took care of them. I feel we might be undermatched and personnel wise in order to do that, but I don't know. I don't expect them to get to the Super Bowl. I just don't.
No? Well, they are just the sixth team since the 1970 merger to score more than 350 points and allow fewer than 200 points over their first 11 games of a season. Each of the previous five teams to do so went to the Super Bowl. The 2007 Patriots, 99 Rams, the 98 Broncos, 91 Redskins, and the 1984 Dolphins. So this is a team on all cylinders, and as is probably going to be marketed on NBC on Sunday night, it's kind of like the new kids on the block against the vested veterans, isn't it, Adam?
Yeah, I guess it is. And you'd hope that acts as a motivational sort of factor for our guys. It's a shame that you haven't got people like Cam and Sherman out there who sort of know this situation so well and thrive in this sort of situation. But you know, we also have a set of new kids on the block in Jaron Reed, in Sheldon Richardson, Shaq Griffin. And, you know, it's probably about time they stepped up and had, you know, the big memorable night at CenturyLink. And I wonder if this might be it.
Yeah, well, it's not the first time Carson Wentz in his second year is making his second trip to CenturyLink Field. 53 or so weeks ago, Last November, he made his first trip as the 5-4 Eagles rolled into town and the Seahawks dealt with them with a 26-15 win, which was highlighted by this trick play from Darrell Bevell's.
Graham is winged on the right side to play fake. Here's the toss. Baldwin's going to throw back to Russell. He's got it! Touchdown! Seahawks! Are you kidding me? Doug Baldwin takes the end around to the right, stops, throws back to Russell Wilson. His first receiving touchdown of his NFL career from 15 yards out. The Seahawks pull out all the stops. Oh my goodness, what a play. They lead 22-7.
Yeah, Doug Baldwin to Russell Wilson. That was quite fun. It could be something, a deep dive in the playbook, which may be the difference in this game on Sunday, Adam.
Yeah, I mean, CJ Process had a 75-yard run in that game as well last year,
Was that his last run? Didn't he get injured in the end zone and we haven't seen him again?
I think he had a couple more runs in that game. You'll have to check. That was definitely his first run of the game, so see how many more runs he had.
We have four.
Okay, so, but I mean, it was his last play of any real significance for the Seahawks. I mean, he got injured against the Giants not touching the ball, which was just, you know, symptomatic of everything that's ever happened to everyone ever, I would say.
That's going to be a moment that I think, you know, maybe between three of us, between me, you and Terry, because we're settled there, but that moment when we all looked at the scoreboard at MetLife, saw CJ Proceis return doubtful or questionable, and we just all kind of looked at each other and swore.
It's been
one of the moments of the season, I think, and only two of the people get the relevance of it. But yeah, sorry, carry on.
So it's going to be a day where we have to find some big plays. They're a well-built team on both sides of the ball for all my jesting. They're good at the back end. They've got a dominant defensive line, and it's going to be hard, but I still feel there's enough magic in the team that they can find a way to get something done on Sunday.
Yeah, and Cedric Field under lights, when the defense particularly starts getting rolling, weird things happen, don't they? We've seen it numerous times. We almost saw it if we had a proper NFL kicker against the Falcons a couple of weeks ago. But I was speaking to Gordon earlier today, Gordon Wright, and he was on about what the defense is going to do to their attack, offensive players. I was just like, yeah, I'm weirdly confident, and I'm not too sure why. There's no, if you look at it across the board and the stat sheets and the records and the injury lists and stuff, there's no real reason to be confident, and even the last two home games. But I am strangely confident. I'll probably just put the complete kibosh. But offensively for the Eagles, last time they come into town, Carson Wentz, 218 yards on 45 attempts, 23 completions. And he had a Desmond TD to interception ratio as well. But he's stepped up a gear while he's stepped up another level, isn't he, into second year, Adam?
Yeah, he has. His completion rate still isn't that impressive. I think the talk of him being the MVP is slightly premature, given Tom Brady still exists, who I think, you know, is by far and away the best quarterback in the league at the moment. Maybe we second, but they're blowing the doors off teams, which is helping. They've got a good run game. The signing of Ajayi has been great for them. But I think talk of him being the MVP is still slightly premature. Although maybe I'm just sleeping on the whole team in general, just because I can't respect them being the Eagles. But I guess we'll see.
Yeah, but there is a certain thing where you have to look at their schedule and kind of suggest, if we mean, it's probably unfair, and there's Eagles fans listening, there might be, you never know. They needed a 70,000 yards field goal to beat the Giants. Look at what's going on there. And they beat the Chargers before they found their groove. They beat the Cardinals without a quarterback. They beat the Redskins and they're hit and miss. They haven't really... The only team you could say they've beaten, okay, that's impressive, is the Panthers, with how they're in Carolina. Is it a fair thing to say where they haven't really played anyone at their peak, and it's something that's just probably going to be the same on Sunday? Is that fair?
I think I'm right in saying they have the weakest strength of schedule in the whole league.
Yeah, looking at the teams they've played, I'd imagine that's true.
So, you know, it's not like we are necessarily the greatest team in the world anymore, but you'd have to think this is probably the toughest game they've faced, you know, circumstantially thus far. And so maybe we can knock them. You know, they've got two games on the West Coast back to back, and you know, I did hear someone on the radio predicting that they beat the Seahawks and lose to the Rams, which, I mean, you might as well just rip my eyeballs out if that's going to happen, because that would be just the biggest possible disaster you could ever imagine. So let's assume that that doesn't happen, because life just has to be a bit more fair than that. But, you know, maybe we can give them something to think about. And yeah, I'm hopeful about this game.
Yeah,
I'm getting more hopeful talking about it, and I don't know why.
Yeah, it's weird that that happens. Yeah, the running the ball for the Eagles has been what it's supposed to look like. They have ran the ball with a hell of a lot of different players, and all bar Jay Ajayi, who's been there for three games, and Wendell Smallwood, who is basically a emergency back or goal line back. They have three running backs. No, they don't. They have two running backs and Carson Wentz, who have ran for more yards than any Seahawks running back has this year. Carson Wentz has ran for 253. Eddie Lacy, who's the Seahawks leading rusher, has ran for 176.
Chris Carson's the leading rusher for the Seahawks, I'll have you know.
Oh, is he? Where's he bumping from?
I think he's got 208 yards, Chris Carson.
So Wendell Smallwood, who's only had 43 carries, has 8 yards less than Eddie Lacy. But the running game is, with all those names, LeGarrette Blount, Corey Clement, Carson Wentz is a mobile quarterback, Wendell Smallwood on the goal line, Jay Ajayi, Kenyon Barner, who stepped up in the Darren Sproles role somewhat. It's a diverse running attack, which we kind of thought and expected or hoped the Seahawks would have at this point of the 2017 season, Adam.
Yeah, they've got a bit of everything. I think it's going to be, you know, stopping the run is normally something the Seahawks do pretty well.
Yeah.
And I'd be pretty comfortable with if that's the way they try to go on defense and try and put the ball in Wentz's hands in probably what is one of his biggest career tests to date. And, you know, if you offered me a game where it's close at half time, I would take it. I think that's probably the way the Seahawks have to play against these good teams, sort of try and make it a one half game. You can't be in a situation like against Atlanta when you're falling down by 14 points. You just can't put yourself behind the eight ball like that. Yeah. So keep it tight, stop the run, try not to allow the big plays behind us, which we're normally with Earl Thomas pretty good at doing. I do think we're a good matchup here.
Yeah, especially. I know we've lost last two, but they were just Blair Walsh infected games. I think
which could happen again. Let's be honest.
Yeah, it definitely could. I think staying out of fourth and one from the what we say in 33-yard line would be a good idea. 23. For receiving targets for Carson Wentz, Zach Ertz, tight end, is the leading receiver with 639 yards.
Oh, good.
And 7 touchdowns is just what we need.
Yeah.
With our linebacking core, which is, well, the defense, the one weakness we've said so many times in this podcast, everyone Seahawks fan can see it, is facing the tight end. You don't want one who's got, it must be near the league lead in yards and obviously not in touchdowns, Adam.
I guess the trick there is you're going to give him one touchdown up the seam. It's sort of like when you're playing against a good football team, you know that someone's going to score, like Aguero's going to score against you, so don't let Otamendi score from a set piece, because then you've got to score 3 to win. So I think it's a little bit like that. Like, you know Zach Ertz is going to score one touchdown up the seam, so, you know, don't let Jay Ajayi bust outside the tackles and score, because then you're buying, you know, then you put yourself in a bit of trouble. So I think that's probably the way. Yeah, just accept it now, because it's coming regardless at some point. Just hope it doesn't hurt you too much when it comes.
Yeah, and as we said, with AJ Green, the Bengals having one receiver who can really only do anything, the Eagles have Ertz with 7 touchdowns, Alshon Jeffrey with 7 touchdowns, and Nelson Aguilar with 6. So it's pick your poison so far of the season for the Eagles, but it is a bit of an uncomfortable matchup when we don't really know what the secondary is going to look like on Sunday.
No, I mean, I guess if you could offer me Griffin, McDougal, Thomas, and Lane, I mean, blimey, it's amazing how times have changed. And it's amazing that I'm looking at that thinking, yeah, I'll take that. I mean, what a crazy, crazy few weeks. But this is where, you know, this is where Rashard and Carroll, this is where they earn their money. So make a scheme that works. This is where you get the big bucks.
Yeah, I think scoreboard pressure with the rookie, and you'd expect under the lights, under surrounded by very drunk Seahawks fans, I'd hope, on Sunday. Terry Peppard is there, so I know of at least one. Yeah, you'd expect that scoreboard pressure will be something of a legit consideration if they, as you said, don't dig a hole like they did against the Falcons.
The Eagles have always been in a huge there's so many games they've jumped onto a huge lead. I mean, they have really good running defense stats, because really no team gets the chance to run on them, because they're always winning by 15 by the time the first advert break has kicked in. Yeah. So it's important to just keep a game close and see if you can test them in ways they've not been tested before this season.
Yeah, as a team, they've ran for 900 more yards than they've given up, and they've thrown for 300 more yards than they've given up, with a 1 point yard per carry difference on the ground and a 3.3 yard difference per play, per reception through the air. So it is a defense, but they are quite aggressive defense. Jim Schwartz didn't quite work as a head coach in Detroit, but he's one of the more underrated coordinators in the league. And he's, on the offensive side, there's so many people contributing and got a highlight. On the defensive side, it's exactly the same with Bradham, Jenkins, Jalen Mills, Michael Kendricks, Brandon Graham. You got Fletcher Cox. You got the rookie Russell Douglas as well. You got the rookie and high draft pick Derek Barnett, who's effectively a role player in his rookie year, but he's already helped himself to 4.5 sacks. It's the same deal on the other side of the ball, isn't it? Looking through the stats, you can kind of see why they stand in the top of the NFC.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, Sidney Jones to come back. Hopefully he comes back healthy for them. The ex-Husky cornerback. I mean, they've built a great defense roster-wise. Schwartz strikes me a bit like a Josh McDaniels type figure, whereby there's no shame in admitting that you can be one of the best coordinators. You don't always need to be the head coach.
Yeah, definitely. I think there's a lot of similarities you see in football with that as well, with certain managers not being able to do it at certain levels, but they can, like Neil Warnock is a prime example of, you can get teams from America, you just can't keep teams there.
There's one for our American listeners.
It's the kind of thing, yeah, if you go and Google Neil Warnock, you'd probably be very confused. He's quite good at his job this year, it seems, with Cardiff. Moving on, one to watch for Seahawks on offense if they're going to have any success against that defense on Sunday, Adam.
It sort of has to be Russell Wilson, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. You need to. I know it's only on Sunday, doing one mistake with the interception in the first play, but we can't really afford that, can you?
No. On Sunday. You can't. I'd rather punt. I'd rather punt for the whole of the first half as opposed to give the ball away in turnovers. You just can't put yourself in the position where you give them cheap points.
Yeah, and short fields on the defensive side. Is it number 54 as always, or is there more pressure with all the attacking options of receiver and running options they've got?
I'm going to go for the duo of Jaron Reed and Sheldon Richardson. I think if we can get pressure on the inside, Wentz is a great mobile quarterback, but let's try and get him off his spot, because he has been great in the pocket as well. I think just trying to disrupt from the interior will be important, and hopefully force him right into the hands of Black Santa.
Yeah, I think I'm going to go a bit along the line. I think I'm going to go Frank Clark. We saw against the Rams a few weeks ago where he was really, really good in keeping Goff and Gurley contained and not letting them go outside. That's going to be something they're going to look to attack.
I forgot about Frank Clark. We're going to win on Sunday, Stu.
Without Chancellor and Sherman lurking behind the front seven, I think if Frank Clark and obviously Michael Bennett and people like Isaiah Jones, if they can contain the quarterback first and foremost and then keep the runs inside and keep the cornerbacks clean and able to get to the ball, I think that could be a big thing in just containing this offense and keeping them down. And obviously then getting off the field on third down. Score prediction, Adam?
24-21 Seattle. Let's do it.
Okay, I've gone high. 35-27 I've gone. So I think they're still going to have their way with us to a certain extent. But I think if he cuts out the mistakes, you cut out a drop here and there, the Seahawks at home,
I think. I mean, I will caveat and say it's highly likely that in my picks I actually go with the Eagles to do a bit of emotional hedging, but we'll see how we go on that.
Yeah, cool. So, yeah, it should be a fun game, and it's going to tell a lot about how many more Seahawks games we're going to watch in 2017, isn't it? Because obviously you've got the Rams playing earlier that night against the Cardinals, and if the Seahawks lose and NFC South round robin goes a certain way on Sunday, it's you're looking down a barrel with an owl on Sunday, aren't you?
Yeah, it's a must win. It's a complete must win.
Yeah, right, moving on. A couple weeks ago on the group, I can't remember who suggested it, but we are going to do it. We're going to start a new feature called the Proverbial Bin. It's something we've used with Eddie Lacy and Blair Walsh. There's two examples for the 2017 season. They obviously are, go without saying, they're almost honorary weekly members at this point. So
they're in an order. They got yellow jackets. But it's mustard-stained yellow jacket from the bottom of the bin.
Yeah, so we're just going to, I think for this one, we'll make it more Seahawks-centric in future one episodes maybe, but a wider NFL brush on something which needs to get in the proverbial bin and you've had enough of. Adam?
Ben McAdoo, get in the proverbial bin.
And you took my one.
I mean, maybe it's not Ben, maybe it's coming from above and no, you know, the Giants want to tank and... Again, you can't say you're tanking, but it would probably be quite smart to try and get the highest draft pick. But come on. I mean, it's just crackers. I mean, give it to Davis Webb at least. Don't let Geno Smith run that offense. I mean, they were so nice to us in New York when they hosted us outside MetLife. You know, at least one of those fans was a nice person. So for him at least, give them something to cheer for. But Christ on a stick, that is not good.
Yeah, I mean... Eli Manning has been a punchline for a number of years, but you can't take away the fact he's a two-time Super Bowl MVP and Super Bowl winner. He hasn't missed a game in his NFL career. He's fought through God knows what he's played through on what has been, for the most part, average to below average teams. Even the first Super Bowl team wasn't exactly great. He's had a really gnarly defensive front. And to treat him like that, I mean, to treat him like this, he's 4 weeks, 5 weeks away from escaping the swamp, which is and it's just a coach out of his depth making a desperate decision. The people above him, Myra and Reese, have obviously given it the green light, but this is all McAdoo. This is McAdoo reaching for something. His how brash he was approaching it is just completely just pathetic, really. And I've seen somewhere on Twitter that people are suggesting that, as you say, they want to tank, they want to get the high draft pick, they want to get the highly sought after quarterback, which is, again, might not be the wisest decision, which appears to be what's going to be coming out this year. And they didn't, but they know Eli Manning was not going to stop, not give like half ass, which is what they're basically asking to do by play the first half, Eli, then step out just to keep your start thing going. McAdoo is just out of his depth. We mentioned Schwartz and McDaniels. I think they belong more as a head coach than Ben McAdoo does. It's just, it's unfathomable, just completely disrespectful and all the rest of it to someone who, with all the punchlines, all the jokes made about him, he's got a legit cause and call to be in the Hall of Fame in 5 or 6 years, isn't he, Adam?
Yeah, I think he probably will be a Hall of Famer. It's a tricky one because the stats don't necessarily suggest that he's a Hall of Famer, but as Dave Damashek says, you know, at the end of every year they give out one Super Bowl and only one team can win it, and as long as that happens, then you have to respect the fact that the Super Bowls matter. And he's won two of them against two of the best teams the NFL's had in the last 20 years, in the 07 and the 12 Patriots. So
yeah,
I think he probably is a Hall of Famer. Yeah.
The first Super Bowl against the Patriots, that's the best team since like Bill Walsh's 49ers in the NFL scene, the best offense the NFL has possibly ever seen with Randy Moss, Wes Welker and Tom Brady. And they, yeah, with a bit of a Hail Mary to the helmet guy. Did
David Tyree.
Win. That's it, David Tyree and Plex Burress as well. But they beat them in the Super Bowl, which is all that matters at the end of the day, as you say. Anyone else you could slide into the proverbial bin, Adam?
I think I will. John Fox probably deserves to go in the bin because he is not having a good time of it. But I think if you've not seen this already, please go online and have a look at the banner that the Bears fan took to the Eagles Stadium on Sunday. It was the Mozilla sign, which if you use Mozilla in its full name, Mozilla Firefox. one of the greatest signs I've ever seen in a stadium.
Do dig
that out, because it was I saw it and I was like, what the hell is that guy doing with the Mozilla sign on the front row at the Eagles Stadium? But that it really is brilliant stuff on that Bears fan. So well done them.
That is tremendous. Talking about coaches under pressure, you retweeted it, and I think even Sky Sports News picked up on it amidst all the talking about Bernard Mendy, Man City, Pep Guardiola, all that nonsense. Chuck Pagano's press conference a few days ago is absolutely off the rails, mental. And I think he's certainly circling the drain, isn't he? Or circling the rim of a bin in Indy.
Was he drunk?
It was almost like Jim Irsay had taken over his body. I watched Jim and Andy, about Jim Carrey and Andy Kaufman, and Jim Carrey talks about how Andy Kaufman made that film and not him, because Jim Carrey is legitimately crazy. But that was kind of like the same thing, where Chuck Pagano sat in his office 20 minutes earlier and Jim Irsay just took over and walked into that room and just ranted about something. I'm not too sure what. I've watched it a couple of times. I'm not too sure what the point he was trying to make, Adam.
Me either. It was complete nuts. At one point I thought it was drugs, then I thought it was booze, then I thought it was tiredness, and then I thought, you're just weird. I really couldn't work it out, I have to say.
Yeah, very strange. Yeah, so we're going to try and do that for moving forward. If you've got any suggestions of who you want to pervert in the proverbial bin, if you want to try and record a short voice clip with your smartphone and send it over email, just message one of us and we will try and get it on the pod next week. But before we finish, quick lock or shock, Adam.
I have the schedule up in front of me, would you believe?
Prepared. When he's not in a Dortmund-induced hangover.
My lock of the week is, and you can put this down as my killer pick for sure, is the Los Angeles Chargers against the Browns, who I think, were the Chargers not the team that the Browns beat last year for their one win? Well, that is not happening this year. LA will take care of business and more against the Browns, I feel.
That could have been a hell of an embarrassing scoreboard if the Chargers didn't lose their kicker last Thursday night. My pick, lock of the week is just because I think the team legitimately might quit on Sunday. I think the Raiders are going to beat the Giants. You kind of saw it a couple of weeks ago what happened when Nathan Peterman was given the job for, what, 6 drives, I think it was, against the Chargers, and then was benched after Tyra Taylor's, whatever that was. I think you could see a similar thing happen. Although the Raiders aren't great, I think they're going to have enough, and I legitimately might think we might see a team which just completely stop playing for their coach on Sunday. Shock of the week, Adam?
Shock of the week? It seems ridiculous to say that this is a shock of the week when you're talking about one of the best franchises in the league in a home game, but I'm going to say the Packers are going to beat the Buccaneers. Does that qualify as a shock?
Yeah, I guess, because it is still Brett Hundley against Jameis Winston, I believe, as well. So, yeah, I mean, Packers losing at home in December is a rare thing. So, yeah, I'll give that as a shock. For me, I mean, I'm not sure it does count as a shock because of how they've played the last month, but I think the Jets are going to beat the Chiefs on Sunday. And I mean, I know it's probably tenuous with how, as I said, the Chiefs have looked last month, 6 weeks or so, but they're back in MetLife where they just completely crapped the bed against the Giants a few weeks ago. I think the same is going to happen on Sunday. And if it does happen, I think Patrick Mahomes might have to get ready to get hit a bit for the next last month of the season. Adam, is the crowding of Alex Smith in September has turned to what happened in San Francisco when he's just managed to win his job and lose his job within the space of a couple of months, Adam.
I feel a bit sorry for him because Kareem Hunt has completely fallen off a cliff.
Yeah, he has.
And I, to be honest, I think Hunt is probably not at fault. You know, this happens to rookies all the time, but I think the loss of the running game is as big a problem, and also doing stupid things like letting tight ends throw passes down the field, even if you can launch it 97 yards. You know, they need to get back to basics, I think. You know, get the ball in Tyreek Hill's hands, try and get Hunt going again. But I actually was going to put the Chiefs as my lock of the week this week, because I do think they're going to get back jump back off and get back on it, because it's the first game they've had that's a real must win for quite a long time. And I think the motivational factor of that with the Chargers, you know, creeping up behind them, will help them get over the line. But it wouldn't stun me if the Jets won, I have to say.
Yeah, I can see that. But I think last time I picked a New York team to be the shock of the week, the Giants got slammed by the Rams in that stadium. So the same might happen again. But we'll be back next week after the Eagles game. The tickets are still going, or spaces are still available for the 2018 National Meet at Toto's Wine Bar in Bristol. Within, what are we, 48, 50 hours after opening it all up, we've sold, we've only got about 35 left, so it's selling at a remarkable rate. We are already working on getting some merch for auctions and raffles, already sorted a couple of items out. So if you want to do that, all the information is on the website at ukseahawkers.com and the Facebook page, UK Seattle Seahawks fans. If you want, or if you can contact myself at @Stu_Twitter on Twitter, Adam D. Nathan on Twitter, Rossbound1984. So the podcast is on iTunes, the Pedestrian Podcast, Instagram, the Pedestrian Podcast, and the Pedestrian Podcast .podbean.com. Enjoy the game on Sunday. It's Sunday Night Football, and then we've got the Jags, which is no longer a 10 a.m. start, which means the Seahawks have been really not helped by the NFL not scheduling a 10 a.m. start in 2017 for the Seahawks. But hopefully, when we next reconvene, the Seahawks will still be in the playoff picture, maybe even with a helping hand from the Cardinals back atop the NFC West. But until next time, this has been the Pedestrian Podcast, and
go Hawks!
That is going to do it. 12, they're bringing the trophy home. Your Seahawks, Super Bowl 48 champions.